During 1948 and 1949, Berlin Airlift pilot Lieutenant Gail Halverson was so struck with the friendliness and the excitement of the children of Berlin that he wanted to do something special for them. He started Operation Little Vittles. He bought candy and he created miniature parachutes out of strips of cloth, and he attached the candy to them and dropped them to the children. But I think you'd like to hear the story from the gentleman himself. He was a lieutenant then. He retired as a colonel. Please welcome to our stage, wearing the same flight suit that he wore during the Berlin airlift, Colonel Gail Halverson.
Hey. I guess you're out there wondering what this Goonie Bird's doing to the Eagles around here. But that's just really great. You know, Chuck doesn't only know how to break that sound barrier, he knows how to choose a good wife. I sat down, I didn't know who was there till I got sat down, and I had a bowl of oatmeal ready to go, and his good wife handed it over to Chuck, but I got it back. Anyway, she's looking out for him, and I'm glad to see that. I'm very grateful that the EAA has invited me here tonight to this special group, the Mecca of Aviation. It's taken me 86 years to get here, but I'm glad I'm here now. I'm sure we're all grateful to Paul and Tom Probretsky for their vision and their generosity that makes this incredible activity just one that can't be matched. I'm grateful to them. I'm grateful, too, to Tim Chope, who is concerned about the youth of America, forgetting how important freedom was. He went out on his own, found an airplane that was practically in the junkyard, breathed the spirit of life in it, developed the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation, and through that, we're going around the country. He's allowed me to fly with him, for which I'm grateful, to help young people understand through that flying museum what freedom's all about, based on the eyes of the young kids in Berlin. I'm also honored tonight, but not for myself to be here, but to represent the thousands of British, French, and Americans that made the Berlin Airlift the winner in the first battle of the Cold War. Grateful for them to have that opportunity. Honored to represent them. Growing up on the farm, my dad beat the few qualities of character in my head that he told me to never forget, and I think I'll try and weave the airlift experience into reinforcing those values, because I think they work for me. He talked about attitude, gratitude, integrity, and service before self as essential in the scheme of human development if we're really to find fulfillment in our lives. Let's screen a video right quick and try and give you a feel to get on the same page of what Berlin looked like, where it was deep in Soviet-controlled territory. Roll it as soon as you've got it, and you'll get a feel for what it was then. I took a lot of movies, and you'll see a few of those old movies.
At the end of World War II, Great Britain, France, the United States, and the Soviet Union divided Germany and its capital, Berlin, into four occupied zones. The three Western allies decided to create a separate West German government in their zones. As a result of disagreements, the Soviets stopped deliveries of food, fuel, and other necessary supplies coming into the city. They intended to starve the people into submission and force the Western Allies to surrender their position in Berlin. According to the Yalta Agreement, the Western powers had air access to Berlin through three air corridors. The southern corridor was used for aircraft from Rhein-Main and Wiesbaden. Aircraft from Celle, Fosburg, and British bases used the northern corridor to Berlin. All aircraft exited Berlin through the center corridor. This provided one-way traffic for all aircraft involved. The city of Berlin was divided into four sectors. Tempelhof was the air base in the American sector, Gatow in the British, and Tegel in the French sector. Tegel was built during the airlift by thousands of German laborers, 40% of which were women.
My whole movies.
Wie heißt der Grund?
beautiful airplanes laboring in the air with 10 tons of coal or medicine, food supplies for the over 2 million people in Berlin to keep them free. I'll never forget that first flight to Berlin. The city looked like a moonscape. How could 2 million people live in a place like this? I couldn't wait to take in that 20,000 pounds of flour and see the reaction. We had freedom and we had food. The Berliners needed both. From that day on, that first flight, we were on the same page. We didn't know what happened to it. Under the airplane, some white things waving, and their mouths were going up and down. And I knew that they'd caught all 3 parachutes, and they all had shared with others that didn't get it. Those kids were happy. And now it's wintertime, and there's snow and ice on the airplanes. The airlift's still going on. We had long-range radar come into Berlin, or we'd have failed to supply the great Berliners. We're taking off on instruments. It's a marvel we didn't crash with that ice. Starting up engines, we understand it's clear to go now. We'll watch the fog.
Düsteren Novembertagen, wo Nebel wie Watte das Land überzieht.
Watch the fog up ahead now. You'll see an airplane coming through the fog. Between the buildings, below the buildings. The new runway was lined up in a graveyard, and the approach was lower than the buildings. And often you wouldn't see anything until the red light was above you, and you know the building was passing you on the right. They would rush out on the steel planking after an airplane would land.
All die sturmfesten Himmelhunde verschwägert mit allem, was Flügel hat. Jeder in dieser Runde sammelt Waren. Ein Blick nach draußen, doch die Fenster sind vom Nebel.
This was a nice gal. She's friendly sitting on the crowbar. Boy, I tell you, they had a hard life.
Woher sie kamen und wohin.
Poor tar. The sand. To try to support this pure steel plank. It was very slippery when it rained. Very slick, and several ran off the end of the runway. One burned. I think we might have seen the car. You can see that. As we take off, you can see the hulk of the burned airplane on the end of the runway.
Okay, we can stop it there. Let's stop it right there and get going. You know, the Berliners lived in those kind of conditions, and without heat, well, a little bit of heat, but not very much. Without lights except 2 o'clock in the morning for a couple of hours, and not enough to eat. But their attitude was, we'll never give in. The Soviets offered them food rations. They said, look, come with us, we'll give you fresh food instead of dried eggs, dried potatoes, everything dried, and just sign up. Very few of them capitulated, and that's attitude. That's an indicative attitude. I think attitude's one of the most important qualities we can have, and the airlift really enforced that with me in that aspect. I believe that attitude is more important than what happens to you. It's how you react to it. It's more important than grade point average. It's more important than money. It makes or breaks a mission. It make or break a family, a home, or a community, a nation. It determines success and failure in all these cases. Well, I know of an airman one time that was just about to get married. He's all engaged, and then he got remote assigned to Thule, Greenland. And his letters got increasingly cold with the outside temperature. Pretty soon, he got a Dear John letter, and it says, I decided to marry somebody else. I'd like to have my picture back, please, very quick. And while he went around to his buddies and got all the good-looking pictures of girls he could, put them in a packet, sent them back to her and said, I forgot what you looked like. Pick yours out and send the rest back. Well, that's attitude. That man could have been worthless to his unit that whole time he's up there that year, but he came back and married a better gal in the long run. Well, I think that when we think of President Truman, we have to think of integrity. When this thing came up, the blockade, when the Soviets blockaded Berlin, Stalin had just taken Czechoslovakia, he'd just taken Hungary, he wanted West Germany, he was on his way. One problem, West Berlin was in his way. and he had to get rid of West Berlin. But most of the advisors to President Truman said, "Hey, you can't feed over two million people by air. It's never been done before. It's this old thing. We've never done that. It's not our responsibility." All this list of naysayers, and he went against the grain, and finally said, "Come on, shut up. We're staying in Berlin. That's it." And of course, the Brits with Attlee and Bevin and the French leaders were right with him, and it was a united effort. We're going to stay in Berlin. So that's really what it takes to have integrity. And right with our situation, with our tankers up there, if they're not in the right place and the right time, the right altitude, then those guys are down the fumes like Chuck trying to get some gas when he's running out. That integrity, he knows they're there. So that integrity ends up giving him hope. The kids that I met in Berlin was an example of gratitude for me. I was up against the barbed wire fence on the end of the runway taking movies. I should have been in bed in West Germany, hitchhiked back instead of going to bed to get some movies. The kids on the other side of the barbed wire, bombed out buildings, barbed wire fence, runway, shooting movies coming overhead. This uniform, kids came up against me, against barbed wire, about 30 of them. Started to ask me questions in their school English, and they did pretty well. And they were cheering me up. They said, "Look, this weather's going to get terrible. This airport's right in the middle of the city. You can't get in bad weather if it gets to be fall and it's still going on. But don't worry about us. We don't have to have enough to eat. Just give us a little. Someday we'll have enough to eat." American-style freedom was their dream. Hitler's past and Stalin's future coming across that border at them was their nightmare. Those kids really knew what was going on right. Well, I got so enthralled with them, I'd waited too long. I had a buddy with a Jeep waiting for me to drive all over the city and get my movies. And I looked at my watch and said, "Don't worry, kids, we won't quit." Took off. Got about five steps, a little voice said, "Boy, these kids are really different outcome." Well, I thought, man, there you got a postgraduate degree in international relations. They're not even out of grade school yet. They know what's important. Freedom is number one. More important than flour. Well, I said, but something more than that. And then I realized in a second what it was. During the war and after war, I flew foreign transport ops. And wherever we went in a foreign country, even though the kids had some gum and candy, they chase you. And we'd carry stuff with us to give to them. They wanted American chocolate. These kids had no gum. No chocolate. For months, they had none. Not enough to eat. And then I realized in a flash that not one of those kids had put out their hand, said, "Gimme," or in their voice inflection, inferred that they were hurting for some chocolate. And it just blew me away. The difference was so black and white. I reached in my pocket hoping to give them something. When people don't beg, you're kind of open, you know, and they're grateful. When people are grateful, it's a synergy. A one-on-one equal five situation enhances the giver, enhances the receiver. And that gratitude was a silent one, but it was so profound. I reached in my pocket and just wanted to do something. All I had was two sticks of double mint gum. I said, "Boy, two sticks of gum, 30 kids, you're going to have bloody noses. Get out of here." And so I started leaving. I said, "I'll never see these kids again. I should have been asleep. You can't go to the fence. You couldn't even go in the terminal building in Berlin. You just have to stay with your airplane and take off and second that last sack of flowers up." So I knew I'd never see him again. About that time, an airplane came over my head and landed on the runway right behind me. And I got an idea. I said, "Boy, I can deliver it tomorrow. I can airmail it. And same kids will get it." And then the red light came on. You know, that's against regulation. You can't do that. You got to get permission. Bombs are okay, but boy. Well, I rationalized. And I said, "What's a couple of sticks of gum, 30 sticks of gum, compared to starving 2 million people? That's how you get in trouble." Well, anyway, I said, "You guys, kids, come out here in that open place tomorrow. When I come over your head, I'm going to drop enough gum for all of you. Have some. If you share it, will you share it?" "Oh, Yavol, we'll share it, we'll share it." And I started leaving, and he yelled at me, "Come back." Boy, that wasn't characteristic. And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "We've got to know what airplane you're in. Every 5 minutes, there's an airplane going over our head. If you don't come too late in the day, we'll be cross-eyed. We won't be able to see a small package of gum. Good night, we got to know what airplane." Well, we flew a different airplane every trip, but everyone was loaded. Different insignia, different logo, whatever. All that we knew was a four-engine airplane. It had a few goonie birds flying them, but not many, and we phased them out. So I said, "Look, when I come over the homing beacon and go over East Berlin to come around land, I'll wiggle the wings of that big airplane. When you see the wings wiggle, that's got it. Get that. Watch that one." I said, "Wow, get out of here. Let's start this thing." Well, I went back after getting the movies to West Germany, but a couple hours before I had to turn around and start flying that night, went to my co-pilot and engineer. We couldn't get much gum and candy. We had a ration. Once a week, we'd get so many packages of gum and so much bars of candy. And I said, give me your ration. What for? They said, you are? You got permission? I said, no. I said, give me your gum and candy. I promised the kid. And they said, you're going to get us in trouble. I said, I'll take responsibility. Give me your ration. And they did. They're good guys. Pickering, John Pickering and Sergeant Elkins, they gave me the ration. Big double handful. Not only had gum, I had chocolate bars. Boy, I smelled that and couldn't wait to get back to Berlin. But then I thought, holy cow, I'm going about 110 miles an hour. Hit him in the head with that and it'll make the wrong impression. So I took three handkerchief parachutes and split it up on it. So it'd do it. Of course, that night, didn't see anybody. The next day, just forenoon, clear day, came in over the homing beacon in the middle of the temple off. Looked down there, 30 kids right in the middle of the open place. They hadn't told another soul. Wiggled the wings of the airplane. They just went bananas, up and down. Still see their arms waving as it came over. Sergeant Elkins pushed the three parachutes out of the flare chute behind the pilot in the cockpit. We didn't see what happened. B-1's got a rear view mirror, but we didn't have one. And it took about 20 minutes to unload 20,000 pounds of flour. And every minute I was sweating. If a guy lined up for takeoff had seen the parachutes come out and got our tail number. And boy, I sweat. But I worried more if I'd pulled the stuff over the four bar fence, the kids couldn't get it. Taxiing out along the bar bar, looked down there, to my relief, there were three parachutes hanging, waving through the bar bar at every airplane. And I said, wish they wouldn't do that. And Pickering says, they know who you are? And I said, nope, didn't have my name tag on. I had my hat on, didn't know I was bald headed or anything. So we said, don't tell anybody, and don't worry about that. We're not going to tell anybody. We're going to get in trouble. So we went about a week. Every day, the kids were out there, more of them coming, and waving like mad. The pilot's saying, what's the matter with the kids? Going crazy. We wouldn't tell them. Well, anyway, we got a ration again. Said, hey, let's do it some more. New kids. We did it 3 weeks. The weather got real bad in West Germany. Only had 20 minutes of fuel to get into Berlin and back out to West Germany to hold. And the weatherman didn't come around the airplane. So I did run into base operations to try and get the weather. Well, I went to big planning tables, stacked with mail. My girlfriend hadn't written me for 2 weeks, and here was a whole stack of mail. Of course, I didn't expect to get it in Berlin, but still I was envious. Walked up against to see what it was, and the letters all said, to Uncle Wiggly Wings, Tempelhof, base operation. To the Schokoladenflieger, Tempelhof, base operation. Holy cow, I said, we're in deep trouble. Forgot about the weather. Went back out to the airplane. We ended up in Oberhofenpfaffen down Bavaria that night with about 10 minutes gas left. Well, anyway, we quit. Well, at least for 2 weeks we quit. And we looked at each other and we hadn't had time to use a ration and said, boy, they're a big crowd. Once more and that's all. Boy, when you said that, you've gone three steps too far. Do a 180 right quick. But we didn't pay attention. We said, once more and that's all. Six parachutes, wiggle the wings, Mayday celebration, went back to Rhein-Main. That's all. We're not going to do any more. We've done all and more we should have done. Too late. Next day came back Berlin to Rhein-Main. An officer comes steaming on the airplane. He said, who's flying this thing? And both my good buddies pointed to me. And he said, he is. Why? And he said, Colonel Hahn wants to see you right now. And I said, what for? You're real innocent, like. He says, he'll tell you. I got in to see Colonel Halverson. What are you in doing? I said, flying like mad, sir. I'm not stupid, he said. What else have you been doing? And then for 15 minutes, I really thought I was going to be going home early, court-martialed. Then he pulled out a newspaper, full on the counter in front of me. There was my airplane, tail number, parachutes coming out of it. He says, I couldn't read the writing, but I could sure tell what the picture was. And he said, you almost hit a German newspaper guy in the head of the candy bar in Berlin. He's got the story all over the world. Why didn't you tell me? And I said, no excuse, sir. I'm a good ROTC graduate, I'm not quite a graduate. You're not supposed to make excuses. So he said, General Tenner called me up and he said, Colonel Hahn, what are you doing dropping parachutes in Berlin? General, we're not dropping parachutes in Berlin. Colonel, you better find out what's going on in your outfit. Clunk. Well, you don't want to do it that way. I didn't want to let anybody know, but not especially the general first. But General Tenner says, hey, that's a good idea. Let him keep doing it. Well, we ran out of handkerchiefs for parachutes. We used shirt tails for parachutes and Swish sweeps for candy bags. Then the kids in Berlin heard we were out. They sent back the old ones for refills. We went to Berlin and got Barrick's bags full of the letters, and we didn't have time to read them or write the answers, especially. The two German secretaries that answered all the mail, they give us the best letters. One boy is 9 years old. Says, my legs aren't as long as 9-year-old guys usually, and I can't beat these guys. I almost got one, a bigger kid beat me today. So, but I saw the parachute. So he made a parachute just the right length, strings just right, and then he gave me a map. He says, when you take off at Temple Off, come down to Canal, second bridge, turn right one block, I live in Bomb Dot House in the corner, the backyard. I'll be there every day at 2 o'clock, drop it there. Well, in good weather, the tower let me do that. I'd have fun. You know, pilots like Buzz Low anyway. Well, over time, making special deliveries, hospitals and other places. But I couldn't hit Peter Zimmerman. Finally, he said, look, he said, I'm going to build a fire, watch the smoke, drop it upwind. You know, a future engineer. And so I tried. And I still didn't hit him. Well, he sent me another letter. He said, you're a pilot? He said, I gave you a map. How did you guys win the war anyway? Well, Peter had lost his dad and mom in the bombing of Berlin. He was living with an uncle. He wanted to be an American. I had a Barrick's bag with letters going to kids in the States for pen pals and State Department. Put his in the State Department. He was adopted by a German family in Palm, Pennsylvania. Lost track in the last few years. Before he did, we got him new boots and new shoes. We got to be really good friends. I never did hit him. I sent a big package of gum and candy in Berlin mail to him. You get it to Berlin, you can mail it with the city, but not to the city. A little girl wrote, named Mercedes, causing us a terrible problem. We live right by the airfield, an apartment. You're coming right over apartment house to land every time, one airplane after another. We got some white chickens. They think you're chicken hawks. They're losing their feathers. They're not laying eggs. And it's terrible during the blockade. Well, I knew that already, but then she said, the last paragraph said, when you see the white chickens, drop it there. I don't care if it scares them. Well, I couldn't find her. By that time, 22 schools in Chicamee, Massachusetts were boxing up 800 pounds of candy and tying parachutes on every other day, putting them in box, cardboard boxes. My buddies were dropping all over the city. Westover Air Force Base would get it to us. We had drop procedures everywhere. And so I took a big package and mailed it to Mercedes. Well, 10 days ago, teachers' conference of 700 teachers in Kansas City, and got Mercedes, flew her and her husband to Kansas City and flew me out from Salt Lake, and I was with Mercedes then. But I've stayed with Mercedes in her place about 30 times since 1972. I went back as the commander of Temple Hof for 4 years for those two sticks of gum. I'm here for two sticks of gum. And gratitude, the kid's gratitude is the underlying factor. If there had been one child put out their hand and said, gimme, I'd have painted the kids all the same color. I'd have given them something, but it wouldn't have gone beyond that. The fact that they withheld that and was so grateful, not one did it, then it was black and white. Do something about it. That gratitude changed me around, changed my life. For not asking, for not saying gimme, they got 20 tons of candy, of gum, over 14 months. All my buddies dropped. Confectioners Association sent all the stuff we could drop through Chicopee, Mass. So that gave me a lesson that I'll never forget. Gratitude, so important in the whole equation of life. Hope is another thing they need. One boy was 10 years old going to school. Now the clouds were very low and it was raining. And all of a sudden out of the cloud came a parachute and landed at his feet with a fresh Hershey candy bar. And he said, it took me a week to eat that candy bar. I met him years later when Tim and all the great guys up here in front in the Historical Foundation flying that airplane flew it across the North Atlantic in 98, 50th anniversary. And he was 60 years old then. He said, it took me a week to eat that Hershey candy bar. I hit it day and night. But then he stopped and looked off and he said, it wasn't the candy that was important. What was important was that somebody in America knew I was in trouble and somebody cared. The Americans really cared about me, and that is my connection outside of here. He said, I can live on thin rations, but not without hope. How true that is. He says, without hope, the soul dies. You know, hope today, almost every airfield in the world this last year has seen hope with the American flag on the tail of an air mobility command aircraft, whether it's there for earthquake, for flood, or to support a war-fighting sink to keep the lives of our young people fighting for freedom free. Hope is an essential item. Where do we get it from? We get it from our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. Some of the greatest statesmen we ever had in this country, and a constitutional scholar, Rex Lee, once said, if you took 50 of the greatest statesmen this country has ever seen, fully one-third of them were there at the time of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. Sam Adams was one such guy. Over here on the right side, sorry about that, you folks over in the right are for the king still, over there, okay? And these over here, like after freedom, we pledge our life, our fortune, whatever we have for freedom. We don't know what it is totally, but we know we don't want what we've got. Sam Adams in the debate said to the king's man, words like something like this, if you love wealth more than liberty, the tranquility of servitude more than the animated contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We seek not your arms nor your counsel. Stoop down and lick the hands of he that feeds you, and may your chains rest rightly upon your shoulders. And may your countrymen forget, your comrades forget you're ever our countrymen. People like this, Patrick Henry, Nathan Hale, all those then and since that have given their lives in the cause of freedom. I'm grateful for those. In service before self, Jesus Christ said, greater love than this hath no man than lay down his life for a friend. 31 of my Air Force buddies gave their lives, and 39 of my British comrades gave their lives for an enemy, the Germans, who had become a friend, who changed post-war history, who through their integrity and through their desire to succeed, to have freedom, was able to withstand those forces. Well, I'm grateful for those patriots that have gone before, that has given this country the freedom it has. It's given us water from wells. They have given us water from wells we haven't dug. We warm ourselves by fires we haven't built. We enjoy a blue sky free of the contrails of enemy aircraft and flowing fields of grain free of the tank treads of enemy tanks. We have friendly harbors harboring friendly ships. I'm grateful for those who make it possible. God bless the men and women who fly, but especially God bless the men and women who fly in this instant in harm's way to give others what we take too lightly, too much, the gift of freedom that every soul is endowed on the earth at birth, no matter what, a desire to be free. God bless them and their efforts, and God bless you, your magnificent outfit that keeps the idea of airlift and aircraft alive and well at meccas such as these and those who make it possible, volunteers. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you. Thank you. Boy, there is somebody out there. I thought you'd all gone home. You can't see anything up here. It's blacked out. Thank you very much. An honor to be with you. I know we've held you a little long, and is there any questions? I don't know if we've got somebody out there or not.
Sir, you said you were a commander in Berlin for 4 years. Could you tell me when that was?
Yes. For two sticks of gum, they sent me back to Berlin with the whole family for 4 years. And that was 1970 to 1974. It was an interesting time. I connected with a lot of the kids then and came by to see us in an open house. We have a big open house once a year to open it up, bring in the latest airplanes. When I was there, I brought the C-5 in for the first time. I flew it in the quarter, but I wasn't current. I just flew with the guys in there, brought it in. We had a big reception for the mayors of Berlin. In the American sector alone, there are 6 mayors in 6 boroughs. In the French sector, similarly, in the British sector. And had a big reception in there with a dance band, and boy, they liked that. Showed them what the modern airlift was. We bring in new airplanes every year when we could. Any other question?
We have a follow-up on that one.
Okay. Sir, I was stationed there at the time that you were a commander.
So oh boy.
I guess I worked
Don't
for
tell
you.
Them.
I worked for you. I was 6912th RSM.
Well, that's great. Good outfit.
You betcha. And I'd like to get your signature when you're finished, on my hat.
I got one more left. Okay, we had a very interesting, my job there was the commander and also the Air Force representative of the city of Berlin. And that was for a guy that been in the technical field, in the space program most of my Air Force career, was totally out of character. The Berliners got together and sent a petition to Air Force headquarters to send me back as the commander, and that's how I got there. Took me out of the space program from my last assignment to be in Berlin. But it's interesting, very interesting, rewarding. People never forget it. Those people are still there and never forget it. Any other questions?
Another one down here in the middle.
This isn't a question, Gail. It's just tell all the people about our Berlin Airlift Veterans Association, how we're trying to spread the word saving the history of the Berlin Airlift.
Well, you bet. Bava, we're having a reunion at the end of September. We've got a pretty good membership, but they're peeling out pretty fast. And that and the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation are two great organizations that I'm honored to be part of. Anything else? Well, have a good time and drive careful and walk carefully if you're walking. And see you around the campus.
Thank you, Thomas. That was great. Thank you very much.